My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Republicans inch closer to a narrow majority in the U.S. House. Plus, President Biden sets a date for his first in-person meeting with China's Xi Jinping. And the EU's executive arm proposes loosening debt rules as countries navigate an economic downturn.
I think that there is a philosophical difference, that there's a wariness of government intervention in the US that is much less present in Europe.
It's Thursday, November 10th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Republicans are on track to narrowly retake control of the U.S. House of Representatives as vote tallies continue to trickle in from crucial races in the West, though the results fell short of the sweeping gains that some in the GOP anticipated. In California, results in five key races could be days or even weeks away. Competitive House races in Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Colorado, and Arizona have also not been called, and results could take days. Journal Politics reporter Eliza Collins has the latest.
The House of Representatives has orientation next week. The new members are supposed to show up, and they might not know who is in the majority or if some of these members will actually end up elected to Congress. So we're waiting to see what's going on in the House. Again, it does appear to favor Republicans, but certainly much more narrowly than they had been thinking going into Tuesday. I mean, we could be looking at a single-digit pickup for Republicans here or single-digit majority.
Republicans had headed into Election Day hoping to pick up more than 20 seats in the House. Control of the U.S. Senate, meanwhile, remains up for grabs, with contests in critical states too early to call, and Georgia headed to a runoff. We are exclusively reporting that the U.S. has refused a request from Ukraine to supply it with advanced drones, despite pleas from a bipartisan group of members of the U.S. Congress. According to U.S. officials and other people familiar with the matter, the Pentagon declined the request based on concerns that providing the Gray Eagle MQ-1C drones could escalate the conflict and signal to Moscow that the U.S. was providing weapons that could target positions inside Russia. A spokesman for General Atomics, which makes the Gray Eagle, confirmed the company had been made aware of a decision but declined to comment on the details. Pentagon officials had no immediate comment, and the White House didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. President Biden has said he plans to meet with Chinese leader Xi Jinping during his upcoming trip to Asia in order to discuss how the U.S. and China can avoid conflict, but he added he won't make concessions on critical issues. The meeting, expected to take place on the sidelines of next week's G20 summit in Bali, Indonesia, would be the first time the two leaders have met in person since Biden took office. Communications between the two governments are at a low ebb, with already tense relations further strained over U.S. curbs on technology exports and a recent trip to Taiwan by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen's estate made auction history on Wednesday, selling a group of 60 artworks for $1.5 billion, smashing the record for the priciest collection ever sold at auction. Paul Allen's family foundation said sale proceeds will go to charity, though it hasn't yet named specific beneficiaries. The sale at auctioneer Christie's suggests the world's roughly 2,600 billionaires continue to feel insulated enough from global economic woes to chase after the season's buzziest consignment. And in other market news today, the U.S. Labor Department is set to release its October inflation report, with results set to show whether the rate of consumer price increases is easing as interest rates climb. This week, the founder of the largest crypto exchange, Binance, provisionally agreed to rescue rival FTX after it was abandoned by clients in the equivalent of a bank run. But as we reported yesterday, Binance reversed course on that rescue offer, saying the problems at FTX were too big and leaving the exchange with an uncertain future. To help us get a better understanding of the current turmoil in the crypto markets, we're joined now by Journal reporter Julie Steinberg. Julie, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So FTX says it is facing a major financial shortfall now. Tell us a little bit more about that. How can FTX cover that shortfall? Are there any plans in place to do that?
The Wall Street Journal reported last night that the firm faces a shortfall of up to $8 billion. And we also reported that the chief executive and founder on a call Wednesday with investors said that he needs emergency funding because of customer withdrawal requests received in recent days. FTX told investors it's hoping to raise up to $4 billion in equity to fill the shortfall. But it's unclear and remains to be seen whether that money is going to come through.
And it's worth adding here that an FTX representative declined to comment. Julie, just stepping back, why are we now seeing these problems in crypto affecting the broader market?
So we already had financial markets that were rattled by the uncertainty around the outcome of U.S. midterm elections. And the implosion of the Binance rescue deal also weighed on financial markets at the same time. We saw that the NASDAQ fell around 2.5% on Wednesday, and the S&P 500 also fell around 2%. And it's because the shakeup in the crypto world is weighing on investor sentiment. Basically, the FTX news could be impacting risk appetite among investors who might want to sit on the sidelines a bit while they wait for these things to shake out.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Julie Steinberg. Julie, thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, faced with an economic crisis, European governments are adding hundreds of thousands of public sector jobs, guaranteeing business loans, subsidizing energy bills, and splurging on infrastructure, defense, and other key industries. But will it work? We'll ask the Journal's European economics correspondent after the break.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Yesterday, the European Union's executive arm proposed loosening the bloc's debt rules in order to give highly indebted governments more room to spend money as they face soaring inflation and an energy crisis caused by Russia's attack on Ukraine. The bloc normally requires governments to keep budget deficits below 3% of GDP and debt below 60% of GDP, but now it has suspended those rules for 4 years in a row. And joining us now with a look at what that could mean for how European politicians respond to the continent's latest economic crisis is Wall Street Journal European economics correspondent Tom Fairless in Frankfurt. Hey, Tom, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Luke. Thanks for having me.
Tom, let's start pretty broad here. Could you just remind us what Eurozone governments have been up to lately?
Yes. So Europe faces a bigger hit from the war in Ukraine than the US. It's reliant on Russia for energy. So the higher prices that it pays effectively takes a 5% bite out of the economy. And so that's one reason that governments have stepped up to try and fill that gap. So, for instance, in Germany, the region's largest economy, they've announced probably three rounds of large-scale subsidies for households and firms for hundreds of billions of dollars during the year. In France, they've also had these large-scale subsidies, which have actually helped to keep a lid on inflation in France up until now. And in Italy, which is the third largest Eurozone economy, the new government under Giorgia Meloni has just said they'll increase their borrowing next year and spend tens of billions of more in payments to support firms and families. So they have done subsidies. I mean, public sector hiring is extremely strong in Europe, and that's quite unusual. They've added, I think it's 4% higher public sector employment than it was before the crisis, whereas in the US, the public sector jobs are down, and it's the private sector that has been adding jobs.
Yeah, and speaking of the US, Tom, how is the approach we've seen there different to what we've seen in Europe?
Well, the US also went big during the pandemic. As you know, these vast payments to handouts to families and supporting workers and so on. But it has since wound those back, and government spending will be a drag in the US on the economy this year, according to JP Morgan, whereas it's still supporting growth in the Eurozone. And I think there's a feeling in the US that there's so much money we spent during the pandemic and now we need to save. But that's not at the moment the case in Europe. In Europe, it's more that the pandemic spending worked. Now we've got a new shock. So let's roll out the same formula. Let's continue with what worked.
Yeah, it does seem like that's a distinct difference between how the American and European governments are responding here.
Yeah, I think that there is a philosophical difference, that there's a wariness of government intervention in the US that is much less present in Europe. And I think also Europe, especially Germany, has a large manufacturing sector, and that needs to change now, that it's under a lot of pressure from electric car manufacturers like Tesla, and they need to kind of rapidly transition to new technologies. They need to become more digital. They need to become more kind of environmentally friendly. And all of those things, the feeling is that the government needs to support that transition.
And finally, Tom, what effect has Europe's government spending had so far?
So it's supported growth so far. The Eurozone has not yet entered recession, despite this massive shock. So far, so good. But there's also the problem that it's running contrary to what the ECB is trying to do at a time of very high inflation. The ECB is trying to slow down the economy and cool down demand, cool down inflation, whereas the governments are still pushing money into the economy. And so they're on this kind of collision course. And at the moment, it's okay. The market interest rates have risen in places like Italy, but there hasn't been a crisis. But in the UK, you can see how that collision between the central bank and the government could end in a more difficult way. The British government last month dialed back this planned program of tax cuts and spending on subsidies after investors were frightened and pushed up borrowing costs very high for the UK government. And so, yeah, investors, I think, are on edge about government spending policies in a way that they haven't been for a while as interest rates are rising. And so there does seem to be a potential for a problem in the future.
That was Wall Street Journal European economics correspondent Tom Fairless joining us from Frankfurt. Tom, thank you.
Thanks, Luke. Very good to talk.
And finally, now boarding a plane with folding wings, or a plane with no traditional wings at all, but instead a wide body that lifts the whole plane skyward. That may sound weird, but NASA scientists say the rise of climate change concerns and the emergence of new manufacturing materials have made a rethink of conventional aircraft design closer to reality. And in June, NASA launched a competition for U.S. companies to submit their high-flying proposals. Journal Aerospace and Defense reporter Doug Cameron says that after decades of plane makers tweaking existing designs, it increasingly makes sense to go back to the drawing board.
The improvements that can be made are, you know, 1%, 2%. Airlines looking at an all-new design, they're looking for something like a 20% gain in efficiency and reduced emissions. So to get that kind of gain, you have to look at something different. So you have an element of industrial policy here. NASA and the US government, and Boeing for that matter, knows that if they don't move, that someone else, be it Airbus or a European consortium or South Korea or China, are working on this too. So there's an element of wanting to be first, but at the same time, the economics and investment required to be first also make that a challenge.
And that's What's News for Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.